Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
I'm actually dealing with a bit of a sketchy situation right now. I had my wife list a mattress on Craigslist for $50. I originally paid $800 for it, and it's only 3 years old. Only one person emailed us, but never replied when we followed up. So we decided to list it again for free. We received numerous replies this time, most of which were incredibly rude or demanding. We picked the only polite one out of the bunch and responded. My wife initially wanted to just email them our address and tell them to come get it. I argued it, saying it was a terrible idea and to see if they follow up with us before giving them any real information. So they reply. We text them our address and tell them to bring a friend so they can carry it down from the third story, and they had a time frame of a couple hours to come get it. They don't respond. 6 hours later, we finally get a response saying, "Hi, are you home?" To which we reply yes. No response again. Getting suspicious. Being in the law enforcement community, I am starting to feel like they may have intentions to rob us, which is why they are making the process slow. Maybe asking us when we're home so they can break in. Needless to say, we won't be responding to them anymore. I dropped out of high school and didn't even try to go to college. I picked up weird jobs, usually late at night. picking locks for folks locked out of their place, moving a bookshelf across town in my truck, or feeding the neighbor's dogs for petty cash. But a few months ago, I got the weirdest request for a job. Before judging me and asking me why in the world I would accept this job, I needed the money. It paid more money than I could ever imagine. The job was simple. A man gave me his address and asked me to follow him around everywhere from a distance and watch his every move as many possible hours as I could. He paid me by the hour, so it was fantastic for me. I had nothing else to do but stalk him. I came to the address, 335 West Trone Drive, Lee's Summit, Missouri. It was an average, boxy house with light brown paint and dark green shutters that sat on a sloping hill. I eyed fence in the back and thought about how I would mess with this adrenaline addict guy who pays other people to stalk him. I did everything. I slept when he slept. I watched his lights go off at night and come on in the morning. I followed his car. I found out his workplace. I stood in his backyard. I broke in when he talked with neighbors to open doors that were closed, crank up the AC, change the TV channel, unmake his bed. Stuff to let him know I had been there. One time I even sent him mini muffins with a note that said they were from his secret admirer. I seemed to really freak him out. I hoped I would get paid even more for achieving the desired reaction. But then he started playing hard to get, making it a game of sorts. His blinds were closed permanently. He changed his locks. He installed security cameras. He even called the cops on me, and I went away for the night. They told me if they caught me outside that guy's house again, I could go away for years with serious harassment charges. He'd have to pay me extra for this one. I called him after I got out of the slammer, waiting outside his house in my truck. I wasn't supposed to, but I wanted to make sure I would be paid more for going through that. He greeted me by complimenting me. "I never even see you around. You're such a good hider. It gives me such a thrill to know you're watching me, though." I heard his ignition start. "Wait, what the F? Are you in your car?" "Yeah, you should know that, buddy," he chuckled. My eyes bulged out of my head as I looked in my rearview mirror. The house across from the guy I have been stalking for months had a running vehicle in the driveway. My lungs plugged up and I turned to drive away. But as soon as I pulled out, the cops were right behind me, signals blaring. But even now, as I sit in this cold, hard prison cell, just coming from a trial that determined that I will spend the next 7 years of my life here, I wonder, did he send me the wrong address intentionally? My friend was trying to buy something off Craigslist Houston, if anyone's interested. He made arrangements to meet somewhere, agreed on a price, blah blah. Couple minutes later, the guy calls my friend back and says, "Hey man, don't come. I was just going to rob you, but I heard some kids in the background when we were talking on the phone." A few months ago, we were moving 600 miles and really trying to get rid of anything non-essential. We had this very heavy desk that was in great shape that we listed for $10 in hopes of getting rid of it quickly. A woman emailed my fiancé while I was at work and said she was interested. What was our address and when could she come by? He gave her our address and phone and asked her to call to arrange a time. No more than an hour after sending that message. And 5 minutes after I came home from work, this strange woman shows up on our door. I answer the door and she says she's here for the desk. She proceeded to walk into our house and walk through our bedroom and other rooms asking what else we're selling. We said nothing but the desk. She looks at it and decides she wants it, and then asks us to carry it down the stairs second floor to her car. She was in her mid-60s, and even though I was like 8 weeks pregnant and exhausted my fiancé, and I carried it down the stairs for her. Not only had she not brought anyone to help, she didn't lift a finger. She wanted us to fit a huge desk in the back of her Beamer. We told her it wouldn't fit, and she begged us to try. We spent 30 minutes trying to fit away two big desks into her car with her directing. Finally, I just burst into tears and said, "Bitch, we put this on Craigslist for 10 bucks so it would be a steal and someone would haul it away themselves. Then you show up without a proper vehicle and I'm pregnant and really shouldn't be lifting heavy objects. I'm leaving the desk in the parking lot and if you come back for it, great. If not, I could care less." She then gets upset that I had yelled and hurt her feelings. She assures me she's going to call her husband and get a truck, and I said whatever and took her money. 20 minutes later, I hear a knock on my door and crazy lady says, "I just wanted to inform you that I was able to fit the desk in my car, and if you had tried a little harder, you could have made it fit." I told her to F off and get off my doorstep. A man once paid me to be hunted for sport. I had stumbled across his post when I was browsing the web for work. I was looking for some sort of side gig to pass the time. I was at a bit of a crossroads in my life. I had quit my previous job to break away from the redundancy it had sucked me into. It was a spontaneous decision with no real planning involved. Luckily, in this day and age, the internet caters to people like me. People who don't care about chasing money or don't want to be tied down. It wasn't the money I was after, but the change it would provide. I felt like I couldn't enjoy anything in life, like I was just going through the motions. That night I had been scrolling for quite some time, skimming over job posts, help wanted here, shorthanded there. I didn't think I would find anything to suit me. It all seemed like the same thing disguised under a different title. That was, until I found this particular ad. I thought it was a scam at first. Comical dollar signs on each side of the Craigslist title like a trap set for the elderly in search of credit card numbers. I clicked on it anyway, curiosity getting the better of me. In all caps, the posting read, "Big money for manhunt volunteer." At least it was to the point. The details below gave a brief introduction as to what the job entailed. I skimmed over them with amusement, half of me doubting it was true, the other half hoping it was. As ridiculous as the prospect was, I had to admit, it was exciting. There were some requirements for the job, however, and I was surprised to find that I fit the bill. Must be male, must be young, and fit if possible. Must not be afraid of the dark. Must come alone. No cell phones, no firearms, no police. Must meet the night before to discuss. The list went on for a while, but ultimately ended with a phone number and a typed signature as someone simply named Bob. I found myself thinking it over. I didn't exactly have anything to lose. No family nor friends. I always lived alone. The idea of wanting to pack up at moment's notice never seemed to sit well with any of the significant others I had in the past. I don't know if it was stupidity or the need for adventure, but in the end, I found myself grabbing my phone. I mean, how often do people get to say they were hunted for sport? The money wouldn't hurt either. I gave him a ring. The man who answered the call was tipsy but eager, and when I mentioned my interest in his post, he seemed to be ecstatic, like I was calling to give him the lead role in a movie. The conversation was a little awkward considering the reasoning behind the call itself. But after a few minutes of cryptic back and forth, we agreed on a meeting place. I was a few towns away, but he insisted I met him closer to his side of the woods. The hunt would be at his estate, and I should stay in town so I was well rested for the event. We would meet at a local bar called The Sixth Shot to discuss terms and conditions. He seemed determined, like he had been waiting for someone for a while. He said he would understand if I was in no hurry, but with my current status of unemployment and lack of overall plans, I found myself matching his energy. I had to admit, the concept was a little exciting, if it was real at all. We decided to meet the next day. The Sixth Shot was a bustling little place. A neon sign with a smoking gun made it easy to find. When I arrived, I found the guy immediately. He looked about how you'd expect a manhunter to look like. He pulled it off well. A black polo and tan cargos, a shiny shaved head with a thick curled mustache, all worn on a very tan and muscular body. He was sitting at the bar alone, and he lit up like a Christmas tree when he saw me, like he knew. He patted the stool next to him, like he was welcoming a long-lost friend. When I crossed the bar, I was met with a firm handshake and a pat on the shoulder. He told me he was delighted to meet me, and drinks were on him. After a brief introduction, he got a glass of top-shelf bourbon for himself, while I sipped on an Irish red ale. I had acquired a taste for it recently. Considering he was trying to hire me with the intent to murder me, he seemed like a pretty cool guy. We got to know each other a little before getting to the serious stuff. The people around enjoying their drinks none the wiser. The man known as Bob was actually Robert Callahan, a man born into a world of wealth and, as it seemed, perpetual boredom. His father ran a very successful chain of automotive stamping companies that he inherited from his grandfather. By the time his father passed, there were so many buildings and people assigned to making the gears turn efficiently across the globe without his input, he was able to live a life of leisure on a seven-figure income without as much as lifting a finger. The companies ran themselves as he grew older, and he filled his young adult years with seeking thrills across the globe. He tried anything that got his adrenaline pumping, from skydiving to whitewater rafting. He took a liking to hunting, which he said had started an escapade of finding the world's most dangerous predators and killing them, no matter the cost. He said he had seen it all, but in all his years there was one thing he hadn't bagged, a human. I laughed at his extraordinary lifestyle, feeling a bit mundane when it was my turn to share stories. Mine was far from exciting. I left the more boring bits out, but I told him I spent most of my 20s as a park ranger. It kept me close to nature and outdoors, but when it's all you look at, it tends to lose its luster. I left that to be a cab driver in the big city, something that kept me in transit and entertained for a while. Always moving, with so many people to observe in the busy city life. But in time I found myself too contained to the city itself, which was why I recently quit. Which brings me about to where I was now, discussing being hunted by another man. He was fascinated, jotting down notes in a little pocketbook while he sipped his bourbon. We conversed for a time. I finished a couple of beers, and he ordered another pour of bourbon. The conversation was nice. It had been a while since the last time I went out with friends. Despite the fun I was having, we couldn't beat around the bush forever. When it came time to discuss the actual terms of our agreement, his face turned serious. I would be paid $5,000 tonight. Granted, I still wanted to go through with it. He said this would help me settle accounts before the event. He said he owned a mansion outside of town, with over 30 acres of forest land. He was outside city limits. His nearest neighbor was 6 miles away. No one would hear screams or gunshots. We would start tomorrow night. I was supposed to get to his estate at 10 p.m. After my arrival, I would get 15 minutes to head into the forest as a head start. He explained when the 15 minutes were up, he would promptly signal with a flare. If I had any second thoughts, I needed to address them and withdraw from the woods before the signal. If I was still in the woods when the flare went off, I would be shot on sight. He said I would be paid $10,000 an hour as I survived. The hunt would go on until dawn, and if I was still alive come daybreak, I would be free. He would be armed with a hunting rifle and a combat knife. I would be armed with my wits. It was evident it wasn't in his plans for me to survive, but that was something I had already come to terms with. He studied my face when he said these things, perhaps trying to gauge my reaction. I tried my best to play it cool, despite being a little nervous. "Does any of this bother you?" he eventually asked, downing the last of his drink. "No, not really. I've always just tried to go with the flow, and doing that made me stumble upon your offer. Maybe if I get out and live a little, it'll encourage me to settle down for a bit more. That is, if I make it out alive." I winked, and we both had a laugh. "Man, you're a riot. If I wasn't trying to kill you, I'd think we'd be pretty good friends." After all the details were ironed out, he paid the tab, and it was time for us to take our leave. We shook on it before going our separate ways. He was excited for the next day, a pep in his step carrying him to his obnoxiously lifted truck. He burned out as he left, almost rear-ending a Buick as he left the parking lot. I watched him go, feeling oddly serene in the cool night air. It was hard to describe. There was no one waiting for me to come back, no one to give me a courtesy call if I didn't turn up. I don't know if it was the thrill of the challenge or just the drastic break in monotony. I spent my life trying to not be a creature of habit. Maybe this would be the last shift off course. Or maybe tomorrow I would just die and not have to worry about it anymore. With the moon shining bright and the cool breeze on my back, I decided I would take a walk before sleeping in my car for the night. It might be my last time to enjoy a night like this. I woke the next day in the back seat of my car, feeling oddly rejuvenated despite my choice of bed for the night. Through the blinding afternoon rays, I found my phone and checked my bank account. He was a man of his word. The $5,000 had been wired as promised. I decided I would head into town and indulge in some of the local variety and find a place to shower before it was time to meet Robert at the estate. I climbed into the front seat and left the bar parking lot. On my way into town, I called my landlord and canceled my lease. I was already living in and out of boxes, and my lease was month to month, so I wouldn't exactly be missed. After getting something to eat, I called and canceled all utility accounts for my apartment, electricity, internet, stuff like that. I had already put in my resignation at the cab company. There wasn't really any ties to my life at my apartment. I would either survive till dawn and get the biggest payday of my life, or not have to worry about the next step if I failed. Either way, this was the end of the current chapter in my life. After spending the day around town, I found myself driving to Robert's property, the sun already making its way into the horizon. His driveway was long and winding, leading to a gigantic house that looked like the surrounding forest was trying to swallow it. When I pulled up, it was already almost dark. A butler greeted me at the mansion, an old man carrying a silver tray covered in a soft cloth. He opened the car door and let me out, introducing himself only as Charles. "I'll be taking your belongings now. If you don't make it out, they will be destroyed at sunrise." He held out the tray. "Of course," I said, handing over my phone, wallet, and keys. After placing them on the tray, he offered a smile. "Would you like a refreshment before heading in?" "Mr. Callahan said to accommodate you before heading into the forest. He truly appreciates you answering his ad," Charles said. "I'm fine, thank you. I guess I'd rather just get to it," I said, wiping my sweaty palms on my jeans. "Of course. If you will just follow me, it's right this way." He gestured for me to follow him. Charles escorted me through the house. The inside was furnished top to bottom in luxurious wooden furniture. Bearskin rugs, chandeliers made of gold, paintings from the Renaissance era. The estate was definitely worth a fortune. We passed by a trophy room, filled wall to wall with mounts of animals from across the globe. They seemed to stare with their glass eyes, following us as we made our way through. Charles made no effort to engage in conversation, and neither did I. The other end of the mansion consisted of a large patio. Waiting for us, there was Robert, who seemed to be preparing for our little hunt. He was running a large combat knife over a whetstone, slowly and methodically as we approached. Propped up next to him was his rifle. The bolt was pulled back, several cartridges laid out on a glass table. Next to it was the flare gun. "The time is approaching," said Charles, and Robert nodded. He wiped the blade off and sheathed it on his belt. I looked at his loadout on the table, starting to feel sick to my stomach. This was seriously happening. Now that I was here and seeing him fully prepared, I couldn't help but feel like I was in over my head. Robert stood and grabbed his rifle. He picked up each 308 cartridge and loaded them slowly, one at a time until it was full. He racked the bolt forward and slung the rifle on his shoulder and grabbed the flare gun. 15 minutes. Then the flare. Having second thoughts, he said, twirling the flare gun on his finger. No, not really, I said, making my way off the patio. I wasn't exactly sure what to say in a situation such as this, so I figured it was best to just get it going. Excellent. I'll see you on the other side. He saluted me and Charles gave me a nod. I turned and left the patio, making my way to the woods. Each step got heavier as I approached the trees, the darkness behind them getting eerier the closer I got. When I got to the tree line, I looked back at the mansion. Robert and Charles just watched expectantly. I swallowed and ducked in, feeling the full weight of my decision perhaps a little too late. Once the mansion was no longer visible, I started jogging. I was mindful of my footsteps. A stray log or vine could trip me up. During my time as a park ranger, I spent dozens of hours hiking trails. I would survey the land weekly, picking up discarded things like trash and lost clothing. This landscape was much different, however. The ground was uneven, years of collected leaves burying fallen limbs and jutting rocks. I was wearing decent boots, but terrain was unforgiving. One misplaced step and I could roll or break an ankle. I wouldn't be able to rush too much. If I could just maintain a steady pace, I would be able to put enough distance between us and maybe find a decent place to hide. With the sun set and no light source, I couldn't see very far in front of me. I tried not to think about how much time had passed. I just focused on pushing forward. Ahead, the trees started to crowd, giant maples with lush branches blocking the moonlight that was trying to shine in. I ducked under them quickly. A twisted branch snagged my shirt, and I shook it loose. Birds screeched and rousted from their perch, flapping away in a panic at my presence, their cries echoing into the night, sending a chill down my spine. There's nothing to be afraid of, I thought to myself. Not yet, at least. I came to a small clearing, and I took a second to catch my breath. I leaned on a tree, shaking clumps of mud and pine needles from my boots. The ground was wetter than I had anticipated.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset. And we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Off in the distance behind me, there was an echoing pop. I looked to see the flare reaching toward the sky, a little orange ball of fire. I pushed off the tree and continued. I had to keep moving. I ran across the clearing, each step squishing on the ground as I went. On my third stride, my boot stepped on something awkward and hard. By the time I heard the clicking sound, I knew it was already too late. the sudden force clamping both sides of my ankle, I could help but cry in pain. I stumbled awkwardly to the ground, agony shooting up my leg as the wind was knocked out of me. I looked down at the bear trap, blood oozing from where the metal jaws were buried. I was frustrated at my foolishness. Of course, he had trapped the woods. Why wouldn't he? I forced the jaws apart, the mechanism creaking, begging to bite down again. My hand shook holding the slippery metal, and when my leg was barely free, I let it snap shut. The steel-on-steel bite clacked into the night, the sound so loud it bounced through the trees. A second later, there was an excited whooping noise. He heard it. He would be coming. I tried to see my ankle in the dark. There were nasty gashes on either side, but I didn't think it was broken. I got back up. It would hold weight. It just hurt like hell. I wanted to look back, but I pushed forward. Panic started to set in. Trying to regulate my breathing, I moved as quickly as I could. One strong step, one babied limp. I scanned the ground, looking out for more traps. There would be more, surely. Branches whipped at my cheeks and pulled at my clothes. I tried to be more careful, but I just couldn't see them quick enough. My left foot squelched in its boot with every step, blood soaking through my sock and into the laces. I pressed on, hurtling a large dead log. I had to find a spot to hide for a moment, catch my breath. My heart was racing. I was having trouble thinking rationally as I could with the situation. An icy feeling of fear washed over me for the first time in a long time. I had gotten what I wanted, a thrill to make me feel alive. But as I looked down at my mangled leg, I was starting to regret it. Gunfire cracked in the distance. A branch next to my ear exploded, specks of bark and dust hitting my face from the racing bullet. I threw myself to the ground and started crawling, dragging my injured ankle with. I dragged myself to a large pine tree, and I sat behind it, trying to come up with a plan. The gun went off again, closer this time. The round punched into the tree, shaking loose needles that fell from above. I squinted in the dark, trying to see ahead. In front of me, the ground started to slope, and I could faintly make out the sound of rushing water. It could be a creek or a small river. Keeping behind the large pine, I slowly stood, trying to stay concealed until I was ready. I pushed off it and started to run for the slope, hearing the gunfire again as soon as I was in view. A fierce pain ripped through my shoulder and my arm went limp, but I couldn't stop. I started down the hill. I could see the shimmering surface of the creek below. There was something bobbing in the water, rotted logs from the looks of it. I needed to get there, get under the water, and use the logs as cover. I worked my way down the slope. The ground was wet. Each step threatened to slide out from under me. There were footsteps now, breaking sticks and brushing trees as they tried to catch up. Another gunshot. The bullet whizzed over my head and missed. I tried to go faster and crouch down, but my feet were too unstable. I focused on the water, limping closer and closer like it was my salvation. I was almost there. Behind me, I could hear the racking of the bolt action, and I shot a panic look behind me. I could barely see him working through the trees, 20 yards away. As I turned back to the creek, my good foot got caught on something and I fell forward. I hit the ground hard and started to roll, painfully and awkwardly in the dark. I watched my descent in a swirl of moonlight and darkness, my elbows and knees clubbed by the earth as I went. I came to a stop at the edge of the water, lying on my back, gasping for air. I could hardly move, my vision spinning as I looked at the sky. I could hear him coming down the hill slowly and carefully. He knew he had won. He was taking his time. Exhausted and defeated, I looked at the creek. It wasn't logs I had seen floating, but bodies. Several of them, bloated and rotting in the clear glow of the moon. The more I looked around, the more I saw. Men, women, children. I'm not sure what I expected. Robert was there now, boots squishing as he looked down at me. A pair of black goggles were over his eyes, a wicked grin on his face. He unslung his rifle and let it fall to the ground, then pulled the goggles off his face. he cast them aside like toys. Disappointing. Very disappointing. I thought with you being a park ranger and all, you'd make it further. But here we are, at the creek. They never make it past the creek. Robert cracked his knuckles and pulled the knife from his belt. He held the knife in both hands and brought it down, aiming for my heart. I put up my hands to fight him, but it only delayed the inevitable. He worked free from my grasp and elbowed me in the head, a blow that sent my vision blurring once more. My arms went slack and he buried the knife in my chest, my lung collapsing as the blade went in. With a grunt, he pulled the blade down, separating my torso down the middle in a nasty gushing mess. Satisfied, he got up and left me there to die. I tried to talk, but it all came out as gurgled whispers. "What? What was that?" he mocked, and he knelt to hear me. With the last of my breath, I spoke my last two words, just loud enough for him to hear. "Thank you." The involuntary screams came next. They were loud and shrill, broken vocal cords shouting in a mixture of barking and screeching. With both hands, I pulled at the large incision, yanking the flesh apart in a spray of blood and disintegrating organs. His reaction was the same as all others before him, a look of pure irrational fear. My thin, inky black limbs burst from the gaping wound in my torso. I was on him in an instant, slashing the knife away and digging my nails into his flesh. I ripped his shirt like paper and separated his chest just he like did to me, my piercing screeches ringing into the night until I burrowed so deep they could no longer be heard. He thrashed and oozed from every orifice as he made room for me, just as the cab driver did, and the park ranger before him. I ate and wriggled as he expired, worming and digging my tiny frame into each limb like a suit. When the fit was just right, I stood up and cracked my knuckles. I looked at my reflection in the water, running a hand over my face to feel the new fit. Better than the last one, for sure. I took my time going back to the estate, making sure my walk was just right and everything was in place. The hours passed as I settled in, feeling more and more at home as I worked the joints and muscles. At daybreak, I emerged from the tree line to find Charles on the patio waiting. He came to greet me immediately. "Sir, this one had you out all night. Was this one better than the others? Can I get you something to drink?" he said. "Much better than the last. And bourbon, if you will." Over the summer, my brother was buying a truck. It was in a town 4 hours away, but the truck was about $6,000 underpriced and still in good condition. We get there and meet the guy, and he offers to buy us lunch while we go over the history of the truck. Over lunch, the guy tells us he works as a smuggler for the Mexican cartel and also owns a local car dealership. We're pretty weirded out, but he was a small guy, so we followed him to his dealership. In the car, we look at his website and see that all of the cars are underpriced. When we get there are no cars outside. None. We go in, and there's three huge muscle men that I'm guessing were his bodyguards. Two of them grab my brother's arms and take him to the back room. The third goes for the door, but I got there first and sprint to the store across the street. I'm freaking out and thinking these guys offered super cheap cars to get people to come, knowing they brought a bunch of cash to buy the car. Then they take your money. An hour later, my brother comes out and we drive to another location to pick up the truck he just bought. I guess it didn't really go wrong, but it was scary as crap. My older brother used to hook up with people on casual encounters. He had done this a few times without any issue, usually with people that were in town for business. He would call me and tell me about it, bragging and stuff. I told him to be careful that he doesn't wake up in a bathtub missing a kidney. He claimed he had it under control. Not too much longer, he called me in the morning. He told me that he had plans to meet up with this really hot girl in a hotel room somewhere on the east side. I think she wanted him to bring some pills or drugs, and he decided not to. Good thing he didn't go that night, because on the news there were stories of people getting jumped and robbed at that hotel when trying to meet up with people from Craigslist. Apparently the girl would be waiting in the room with some big dude in there too. As far as I know, he hasn't tried hooking up on Craigslist again. A couple years back, I had arranged with some dude 10-15 minutes away to meet me for a Pokemon card purchase. I made clear to him all of my rates, deductions for condition, and lack of interest in purchasing Japanese. He made clear an intent to sell for that price. I made clear an intent to buy at that price. I arrived at Starbucks. He showed up 30 minutes later than the agreed time. Already a knock against him, but when things progressed, I instantly found a couple things to be wrong. The dude hauled his whole family with him. Normally, it's a good idea to bring people with you, but not if you're a mid-30s adult visiting a location right by the freeway. His cards were not organized at all. Literally just thrown all over the place. The geek in me died at the sight of some of these, including beat-up Charizards. So after awkwardly looking through his cards with a hungry daughter and baby mama waiting on him, I made my offer. The dude then pulls out eBay on his iPhone, shows me the latest unsold Charizard auction at $100, and then demands I pay him $70. When I say no, he gets irate, starts accusing me of trying to rip him off, and threatens to beat me up. So I defused the situation by offering some recommendations on better places to look up prices, shake his hand, and get the F out of there. I was fine. But I did make some extra detours that night just so he couldn't trace me back. Well, this is a different kind of wrong. About 10 years ago, I bought a cell phone off of Craigslist. The guy showed up in a public parking lot with his family in the van. There was nothing suspicious looking about them at all, and I was too naive at the time to know to verify the SN number with Sprint first. So, we made the sale, and I went home to activate my phone. When I called up, Sprint told me the phone was stolen. I called the seller back and explained to him what was going on. He was apologetic and adamant that he had no idea. I said I wanted my money back or I was calling the police. He agreed to meet me first thing the next morning. In the meantime, I started playing around with the phone and found the previous owner's number. I called it. A guy answered, and I explained that I thought I was holding his stolen phone. He asked me for the model and info, then told me a story I still have trouble believing. 6 months earlier, the guy was driving on a bridge and was hit by another car. He actually drove off the bridge and into the water. Paramedics rescued him. He was actually dead for a minute or two and brought back. But he figured the car and everything inside of it was a total loss. He never thought about it again. I was holding the phone that went over the bridge with him in the car. Somehow, a scrapyard must have pulled it out and sold it. It was restored and then sold to the guy I bought it from. The dude was nice enough to call up Sprint on a three-way call with me and have them remove the security block so I could use his old phone. Everything turned out fine, and the phone worked great. I wouldn't say it went terribly wrong. It was just terribly aggravating. My spouse and I were selling our worldly goods because we were moving across the country. The month before we left, we listed everything on Craigslist. Our old house had a gnarly, unfinished basement. During our time there, we'd done our best to upgrade the look from Silence of the Lambs to dank room appropriate for shooting prawn, but it still wasn't anywhere a person would love to hang out. But we didn't want to just fill it with stored junk. So we put in a subfloor and built up a pretty nice gym down there, free weights with rack, elliptical, treadmill, recumbent bike, a couple benches, and a Gold's Gym multi-gym, all of which had to sell. We were especially dreading the multi-gym, because there are always a ton of them on Craigslist, presumably unsold, and we knew from assembling it that the stupid thing had 650 pieces. We feared we'd have to beg someone to take it away. Wouldn't you know, most of the gym equipment got snapped up right away. I'd like to take a moment to thank all those nice folks who, despite what I'm sure were many, many reservations, gave us the benefit of the doubt when we invited them to go down in our Ikey basement to see our gym equipment. Thank you for not assuming we were serial killers and knifing us in self-defense. And despite our expectations, the multi-gym was one of the first things to sell. Yay! The guy who bought it had broken up with his girlfriend and she'd moved out. He was going to turn the extra space into a gym. He gave us half down in cash, a check for the other half. Note, this guy was legit. This is not a story about bad checks and took the barbell weights, telling us he'd like to arrange a time in the next week or so to come over with a friend and take down the main gym. Sure, we said. Well, to make a long story short, 1 week became two. 2 weeks became three. The guy kept calling to arrange a time, then canceling. We were almost done selling and packing up everything else, and we only had a little more than a week left. Where was this guy? Finally, with only a few days to go before we hit the road, he calls. I'm going to have to return the gym. What? This isn't Sports Authority. You bought it. Well, it turns out he decided to use the time tested got back together with my ex clause. Girlfriend back in. Gym out. Eye roll. Sure enough, he came back over with the barbell weights. Then he graciously offered to let us keep $100 of his earnest money for his trouble, which we graciously accepted damn right we did, which put a look on his face like he was expecting us to even more graciously refuse. Haha, because who knows what kind of a hit we'd have to take, trying to sell the stupid thing again with 3 days to go. Luckily, we relisted it that afternoon at the same price, and had it resold again by that evening. Phew. And the second guy came right over and hauled the whole thing out in record time. Then we disconnected our phone. No backsies. Was selling some West Elm bedside tables and got a response from a guy who asked a lot of questions about use, etc. I didn't think much of it, but would later figure it out. He wants them, but can't come get them. He asks if I could deliver them, says that he's going to pay more since I have to carry them up a flight of stairs at his brownstone in DuPont. They weighed less than 20 pounds apiece. I had a car, was already asking way too much expecting to haggle, and he wanted to pay more on top of it. Done deal. Not a sketchy neighborhood, and I'm not a little guy, not afraid. But told him that I was relaying all the details to a friend who expected to hear from me after I delivered them. He assured me that he was a cool guy, blah, 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 and that we could even have a glass of wine if I felt like it. So I get there, and he's this effeminate guy in his mid-40s that is pretty normal for that neighborhood. DuPont is the more gay section of D.C. He has a small driveway in front, so parking is not an issue. He wants me to first bring both inside the door, and then up to his extra room from there because he doesn't want to keep the door open. It didn't bother me to do this because I wasn't really even thinking about it. I haul them both in, and he makes a few cracks about me being a big, strong guy, but in a less cheesy way. I take the first one to the top of the stairs where he's waiting, and he points me into a doorway and says, "By the tall lamps by the window." The room is full of furniture lamps, little side tables, bar stools, all smaller stuff, and of some quality. It's a little weird, and I can't figure it out initially. I turn around and he's standing there sans pants with his huge pecker in his hand. I laugh a little and say, "Oh, hello, penis." I was trying to be cool because for some reason I didn't want to embarrass him. Why? I have no idea. He says, "Let's play with this and then we'll settle up." Obviously, this was his gigantic meat bat he was shaking at me. I didn't feel like he was going to force me to do something I didn't want to do, because he was standing across the room and he wasn't blocking the door. I said, I'll just grab the other one and be on my way if you can just pay me, and walked toward the door to get the other table. He made some kind of, "Are you sure you don't want to at least try it?" comment as I passed. I was trying to play it cool, hoping he'd realize that I wasn't into it and just pay me. I was lucky he saw it my way. When I got back to the top, he had his pants on and a wad of cash for me. I actually apologized to him. "Sorry, not me deal, man. Good luck." His little trick explained two things. Why he was questioning me so much about the tables over email. My Gmail address gives no clue as to my sex. After a bit, he was able to discern I was a male and about what age and agreed to buy. All the other furniture was from dudes he'd pulled the trick on as well. He just surfed Craigslist all day buying furniture and hoping some guy would take his gigantic bait. I emailed him later suggesting he be upfront about this and that someone may react violently to him one day. He didn't respond. I now give everything to the Goodwill. Not Craigslist, but just as creepy. My mother and I were in line at a garden center trying to buy some potted flowers. The gentleman in front of us says, "Oh, don't buy those here. I have plenty in my yard, I'll just give to you," and gives us his business card and walks off. Turns out he's a prominent photographer in Edmonton. We talked about it for a bit and then thought, "Hey, what's the worst that could happen?" So we called and went. We're on the way when my dear mother says to me, "Oh my God, now I know why he sounds so familiar. I think he was charged with murder in the 80s. My first thought is, how after 20 years could you pull this random fact out of thin air? And my second thought is, why couldn't you have thought of that before we were parking? So now we have to decide, go in for free plants or get the F out. My mother comes up with this dazzling plan, since there's two of us. If he murders one of us, the other can go for help. We went, and he was very nice and polite, and we got free plants, and he gave me a print, and we didn't die. Once I got home, I Googled him. Turns out he wasn't charged with murder. Someone tried to murder him. But holy, bricks were shat. My buddy responded to an ad for a cheap-ass car. He took it for a test drive, and it ran well, so they agreed to a price of $200. After the money changed hands, the seller said he will go inside to get the extra keys and bring the car around. About 2 minutes later, the car passes by and continues down the street. My buddy freaks the F out and gives chase. Unfortunately, the car gets away, and he is left to go back to the house and see if he can sort it out. As it turned out, the car that passed by was just an innocent motorist with the same car merrily going about his business. It's very fortunate my buddy never caught up to him. I could only imagine the seller back at the house, wondering why someone would hand him $200 and take off running. He did get the car after all, and it ran for 2 years.